Hello and welcome to episode 9 of series 3 of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. Welcome to this episode of the podcast. Just want to give you a heads up on what's coming up in future episodes. In the next episode, which is going to be going out on the 24th of May, I've got an interview with Sam Blizzard. Now, Sam works for Fortnum & Masons, and he is going to be telling us all about the importance of building your own personal brand as an internal communicator. That's not just for those of us who are running our own businesses or working as consultants. This applies equally to you if you are working in an internal role, if you're an internal communications person within an organization. So this is all about how you build your own personal brand, your own kudos within your organization, within your circle of influence, so that you can be more effective. So Sam's going to be telling us all about that in the next episode. And then the episode after that, which is going to be going out on the 7th of June, is an interview with Laura McHale. Laura works for an organization called Conduit Consultants, and Laura is going to be telling us all about the neuroscience of organizational communication. Laura's just written a book on this, a fascinating book, and bringing some real scientific knowledge and background to the area that we are so passionate about around internal communications and employee engagement. So that's the interview that's really going to be going out on the 7th of June. Just a few events that we're involved with that I'd like to make you aware of on the let's do these in date order. On the 16th of June, we're running another of our free webinars, which is for anyone who's involved in health and safety training or communication, or knows anyone who's involved in that. We're running another one of our free webinars on the 16th of June at 3 p.m. That's UK time. And that's all about how you can transform your health and safety communication and make it a lot more interesting, a lot more engaging, and basically turn it from just being around tick box compliance-based training and communication to something that's much more hearts and minds, much more about building conviction. And we're going to show you some of the techniques that we found work really well when it comes to making your health and safety communication really interesting. So if you want to book up for that, go to our website, which is thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, go to the events tab, and if you have a look on the page there, the way it's set up at the moment, you'll see it's the second event. So if you scroll down to the event that you can see at the bottom, we're just in the process of changing over the way that we list our events on the website, and this one is just one of the final ones to change. But we've left it in the old format because we didn't want to mess up anything if people have already booked up for it. So you go to the website, events, on thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, scroll down to the bottom of the page or pretty much to the bottom of the page, you will see the event there, which is Transforming Health and Safety Communication and Training. You can find out more information and you can book there. Now, the other thing we're involved in is we're involved with this year's IOIC, that's the Institute of Internal Communications latest event, which is the IOIC Festival, Communications Festival, and we're involved in that. We're going to be speaking on the first day of that, so it's a two-day event on the 5th and 6th of July, 2022, obviously, they've got some amazing speakers. It's an amazing agenda. It's all based around inspiration, practical ideas, problem solving. There's going to be some coaching opportunities in there as well. Got a really fantastic lineup of speakers, including myself and one of our clients, Sarah Bonus from Walgreen Boots. We're going to be co-presenting on the gamification of management communications. We've done some work recently with Walgreen Boots and rolled out a global program for them using gamification to help communicate their management, some management, key management messages that they wanted to get out there. Sarah and I are going to be presenting on that. But as I said, there's a fantastic agenda at 2 days of amazing presenters, amazing activities, lots of things going on there. It's the actual conference is a face-to-face conference. It's in Nottingham, in the UK. It's in Nottingham, and that's on the 5th and 6th of July. Now, if you're interested in that, if you're a member of the IOIC, you've probably maybe heard about it already, but just as a reminder, but if you're not a member of the IOIC, you can still attend. You're more than welcome to attend. It is paid for. It's a paid for event, but you can book tickets there. If you go to the IOIC website, which is ioic.org.uk, and if you go to the events at the top, you'll see the IOIC festival 2022 as the one of the events there, and you can find out more information on how to book. You can book for both days or one day. It's residential, obviously, if you want to as well. But really fantastic event, and obviously great to see events, face-to-face events like this, returning to our schedules. So that's we've got quite a long interview today, so I'll wrap up there with the introductory messages. And if you've got any, just before I do that though, if you've got any feedback for us, please go give us some feedback via our feedback form on our website, which is engagingic.com. You can see the feedback form there, and you can also join our Facebook groups if you wish. We've got a Facebook group, a private Facebook group for listeners, and you can find the details about that there. Anyway, I'm going to wrap up there and go straight into today's interview. At The Big Picture People, we specialize in helping organizations to have conversations that they struggle to have for themselves. We typically help organizations to discuss issues like strategy, vision, values, direction of the organization, things like health and safety, typically topics that organizations either shirk or avoid or don't do particularly well. And what we're going to be talking about today in this episode is about one of those topics, actually two of those topics, and that is about menopause and midlife. And menopause isn't just a gender issue, it's not just an age issue, it affects colleagues directly or indirectly and should be considered actually as an organizational issue. Managers and employees need to understand what they can do to help colleagues who are going through the process of menopause or going through midlife issues in general. And some statistics that we unearthed for this interview, which is actually a LinkedIn Live session we recorded a few weeks ago, which these statistics are quite important, or very important. 99% of women stated that menopause has impacted on their work. 59% of them have said that they've had to take off work due to symptoms of menopause, and 12% have resigned as a direct result of menopause. And I think it's in an age where never more than ever have we realized that we need to attract, retain, and promote the best talent within our organizations, that we need to understand that to create a workforce and sustain that workforce, we need to create workplaces that are conducive to women. And also to recognize that menopause isn't something we can just ignore or expect our managers to be able to deal with, no matter how difficult that conversation is. So if conversations about menopause and midlife are being ignored and overlooked or just conducted badly, we need to think about what the consequences of that are within our organization. So in today's interview, we're going to be looking at the impact on organizations and individuals of managers ignoring conversations about menopause and midlife, and how they can start to have those conversations that they don't know how to have, particularly in relation to these two areas. But I guess anything you can relate, anything that organizations struggle to talk about, to some of the lessons that you'll hear about in today's interview. And what else also can we do to create awareness and empathy for our colleagues who are experiencing issues related to menopause and midlife? So as I said, this is a LinkedIn Live session we recorded a few weeks ago, but we're repurposing for the podcast because it was a great conversation between myself and two excellent guests. And I really hope you find this an enlightening and interesting conversation. Welcome to our latest LinkedIn Live session. I'm with a massive pleasure for me to introduce Dave Algio and Carolyn Hobdy. Say hi, and we'll do some introductions in a minute. Fantastic. So we're going to be spending the next hour talking about menopause and midlife, and particularly how organizations need to embrace and recognize these as really relevant issues. So why are we hosting this at The Big Picture People? Well, we help organizations to have conversations that they don't know how to have. We've got a toolkit of approaches that that unlocks some of these hard to reach areas, be it health and safety, be it how we talk about our vision and our values, or be it how we talk about things like menopause and midlife. So that's why we're hosting this session today. But I'm in my midlife, or I think I am. I wanted to bring some real expertise into this conversation so we can have a kind of really in-depth conversation. So I'm going to introduce Carolyn Hobdy, she's labeled here as our midlife mistress. So do you want to let everyone know what your expertise and background is, Carolyn, please?
Absolutely. Thanks, Craig. So I spent 25 years in the corporate world. I was an HR specialist. So I worked my way all the way up to being a statutory board director in a couple of different businesses. But now, as you say, I'm the midlife mistress. So I specialize in talking about twats. Is how I label myself. And I talk about both kinds of twats. I talk about the ones who bring negativity to our lives, the ones who make us question our identity, affect our confidence, and who we sort of show up as. And that includes ourselves, because sometimes we can be a twat to ourselves. And I talk about twats in terms of the lady part kind. So I talk about the menopause and women's health.
Fantastic. Excellent. Thank you, Karen. And I'm sure we'll go into some more, like more of your background as well as we explore the conversation today. Dave, would you like to tell us the restless midlifer you've labelled yourself as? Just tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Great, Craig. Thanks for having me along. Yes. As you can probably tell, I'm definitely within that midlife, probably, I don't know, nudging towards the other side of it. But I work with individuals and groups around that idea of how do we reclaim a sense of adventure within midlife? And that's coming to terms with, you know, perhaps career staleness or, you know, that staticness you feel, perhaps putting health habits on hold a bit and just losing a sense of direction really in life, but realizing that perhaps the clock's ticking. So it's about how do we reinvigorate life and find that sense of adventure again. And before that, so many of us, if there's anybody who does know me from other guys as the Stressed Guru, I do speak and train around stress and positive coping as well.
Fantastic. Excellent. Good. And I know you both pretty well, and I'm sure we're going to have a really lively discussion today. Just for those of you who are joining us and you may be joining us, it's a bit like the you know, kind of being on the airplane where you sort of keep hearing the same thing over and over again. So we are going to be live for about the next hour. It's 2 o'clock in the UK. I know we've got people probably joining from different parts of the world. So up until the next hour, we'll be live. We are going to have we'd like some interaction as well. We'd really like, obviously for those of you on LinkedIn Live, we are going to put this out as a podcast as well, this the audio from this as a podcast. So apologies if you're listening to this and I'm saying please give us your comments, because it's not going to be the live version. But if you want to put any comments or questions that you've got for Carolyn, Dave or myself, please fire those in and we'll deal with those towards the end or maybe even halfway through if we've got any questions. So let's sort of kind of set some scenes then, and I've taken this from some of your content, Carolyn. So you can I'm not claiming any credit for this. This is your words, not mine or ours. So I'm going to kind of verbatim. So menopause is not just a gender or an age issue. It impacts colleagues directly or indirectly, and should be considered as an organizational issue. All managers and employees need to understand how they can support their colleagues. And there's some really important statistics, I think, that kind of set the sense of urgency for why organizations do need to be talking about menopause and midlife. 99% of women stated that menopause had impacted their work. 59% said that they had taken off time because of the symptoms of menopause, and 12% have resigned as a direct result. Now, we're all aware at the moment, the big thing is the kind of big resignation and the war for talent, and how do we keep hold of people? And I guess the audience on this who are listening to this are probably going to be people who are in working in HR, in organizational development, or internal communication. So there's a whole an area that our organizations need to get their head around. So just to sort of kick us off then, and maybe Carolyn, if you want to kind of sort of lead on this, or Dave, if you want to, whoever wants to lead on this, is why is it that this is something that organizations find so difficult to talk about? Why is it that it's, whether we call it taboo or just or ignored? What are your thoughts on that? Carolyn, do you want to kick us off on that?
Yeah, I think that it really starts with the fact that actually, as women, we don't talk about the menopause much at all. In fact, 66% of women surveyed said that when their menopause came along, they knew nothing or very little about the menopause. Mm-hmm. So women themselves don't talk about it much in the first instance. And it's one of those things that, particularly because women more so than men, and again, I don't want to set one gender against the other because that isn't the intention, but more so than men, women get judged for getting older. You know, men become distinguished, women just become old and on the scrap heap in, you know, in life in general, and then, you know, in careers as well. And I think that, you know, women tend to be embarrassed and don't want to come out and say that actually they're going through the menopause, because it's really classified with old age and being, you've gone past your usefulness in life in general. But if we bear in mind that now with life expectancy, women will spend a third of their lives postmenopausal, they still have an awful lot of life to give. So back to your question, I think that, you know, organizations don't talk about it because women don't talk about it. You know, we don't talk about it enough amongst ourselves, albeit that I think that conversation is starting to ignite, which is great. But there is still an awful lot of evidence of the fact that women don't talk about it. And therefore, you know, we don't talk to men about it or our partners about it particularly. And then beyond that, we don't talk about it in the workplace. And I think, therefore, there's just a huge gap in understanding for both men and women in the workplace of exactly what the menopause is, how it affects people, who it affects. Because, again, I think there's lots of stereotypes and myths out there about who's impacted. And so I just think we just don't realize that we need to. I think it's as simple as that. And then when we do realize we need to, we realize we don't have the language and the terminology, or we feel uncomfortable, or we're worried about offending somebody. So it's kind of a mixture of reasons, I think.
And I think, you know, we had this conversation when we were kind of setting up and preparing for this, as you know, we've got two blokes and a woman talking about menopause, and it's sort of, you know, the ratio seemed wrong. But then actually when we thought about it, that's actually what we're trying to do, isn't it? We're trying to get people like me and Dave and other, not just midlife men, but males in general, recognizing that this is a legitimate, not just a legitimate, it's something we need to be kind of recognizing and talking about, and not kind of burying our heads in the sand. And I think, you know, I think it has a lot of, I think generally we are, organizations aren't very good at talking about people and emotions and things like that. We're great with KPIs and, you know, objectives and that sort of thing. But when it comes down to people, things in general, and this is an area particularly where, as you say, I think there's always the kind of the misconception that you may just say the wrong thing and therefore it's better not to say anything at all.
Yeah. And I think as well, you know, again, I love a bit of a stat to kind of reinforce a point. But I was looking at another survey only recently where 60% of men said that they would actually like to be better informed so that they support particularly their partner based on the angle of the survey. But, you know, it gives you a sense that men do feel really in the dark about the menopause. And some, you know, there are lots of good guys out there and they want to do something more, but they just don't really know what they can do and how and where to get information.
Definitely. And Dave, from a kind of perspective, I guess you're applying that same question to, you know, midlife in general, because obviously menopause is part of the kind of female experience of midlife, and what about midlife issues in general? Because we're kind of, you know, we're an age where we are probably, and we're consultants, and we don't work inside organizations, but I guess there's that recognition that midlife again is something that kind of we don't really talk about it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I think there's definitely more conversation around it. And just to echo one of the Carolyn's comment there about things are changing, I know I've noticed that when I work with clients that, you know, years ago, it was never something that came up in some of the comments or discussions, even around workshops, you know, when we're talking about workshops, not that I would ever deliver on that topic, but now it seems to factor in as something that we need to at least address or mention or signpost within topics. So I think it's certainly becoming that. But I think you're right with midlife in general, it's, I suppose it was never on my radar, you know, a few decades ago. So perhaps I wasn't picking it up as well, but I've become more aware of it. And I think there is a recognition, I know amongst many organizations that I speak to, that we do have a workforce, and potentially in some organizations, it is aging and heading towards that, well, even looking towards retirement or losing staff because of that retirement and what have you. So they're becoming conscious that factors like, I guess, menopause and 12% losing staff because of that is an additional factor to factor in, you know. And in terms of it, I think it is one of those things that as you know, you might follow a particular career path, and in your younger years, dare I say, you can be very committed. You think this is the direction you want to go. You build your life around it. But there are points in life where you get to go and think, is this it? Is this what I really want? Is this how it's panning out? Is it panning out the way I want it to do? And then couple that with the physical changes that are happening. Obviously, Carolyn, you're talking about the sort of the female side, and both female and male. There's also just the general aging process. The fact that, you know, if we start to take our eye off health and physical fitness, then the declines in sort of, you know, looking at our physical mobility and those kinds of things do start to take hold a little bit more. So we can find ourselves in that combination of both the psychological questions of like, is this the direction I'm going? Have I, you know, I'm building a life a particular way. Is it what I want? Plus, I'm not quite as limber or recovering as well from that bug or that hangover, even, you know, those kinds of things. I'm just not as responsive as I used to be in those senses, you know? So I think it does start to lead you to question that as an individual. And then that can have a knock-on effect onto the workplace, you know, in terms of, is it a manager? How do I motivate my team? How do I keep an eye out for somebody who perhaps is in that place? They may not be unhappy per se with work, but there's other things going on, you know?
Yeah, no, I think it's really interesting. And I think, you know, when you look at, I think Carolyn's point really is valid there, you know, around, as working ages get, you know, we are expected to work longer, and I think we, you know, and I don't think that's just from a, you know, when you can retire perspective and when you're a pensionable age, but actually I do think there's a huge amount that people in midlife can bring to organizations. They aren't, you know, on the scrap heap. There's a lot of wisdom and experience that organizations can tap into as well, and I think it's really important. So when we're now kind of moving into what are some of the things that we've seen work well or know that work well, or what can organizations who do want to start to open up a conversation, do want to start making this something that people feel more comfortable talking about, what are some of the ways that organizations can start to have meaningful conversations and not tokenistic, you know, we've sent everybody on menopause awareness training and sort of tick that box. Carolyn, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are always some of those foundations that it's worth putting in place. You know, and you're right, the training, it's painful, isn't it, when it's a tick box thing. But actually, you know, I think training helps, but I think it needs to come a little bit further down the line once we've sort of raised awareness in the first place. You know, a lot of organizations now are actually implementing menopause policies. And again, you know, despite a background in HR, I'm not a massive fan of a policy because I just think it's like, oh, we've got a policy about that. And everybody sticks rigidly to it. However, as a start point for a conversation and something that might make line managers and employees feel a little bit more like, okay, this is a thing, this is a conversation, I think at least in the first place, introducing a policy, you know, is not a bad idea, because it at least puts it on the radar of employees and line managers, doing a bit of awareness raising about the fact that we're introducing this new policy and this is why. You can start to do a bit of education. But beyond that, I think some of the really important things to do, I think you need to talk about it at a senior level. I think it should be a topic that the board of directors, for example, talk about, not least because typically your board of directors in your average company are midlifers. And so, you know, there are not, and I know this from my own experience, many women still sitting around those tables, but the guys around that table, you know, do need to understand that for the women sitting around that table at least. And then, you know, beyond that, the workforce. One of my favorite ones really is about having, well, there's a couple of things actually. One is about having menopause advocates or champions. So people that both line managers and employees themselves can go to and talk to. So those people that you might give some training to in a more in-depth way in the first instance. either, you know, ask for volunteers. So they might be, you know, women that come forward that are interested, women that are menopausal themselves might want to come forward and do that role. You know, mental health first aiders are good people to go to, you know, even actually your first aiders, because there is likely, you know, there's a high percentage of women, for example, going through the menopause who have panic attacks. So actually your first aiders need to be aware of like some of the medical implications of menopause. And I'm not saying they can treat people, but they should be aware of some of these conditions. So actually the idea of having some kind of menopause advocates, champions, whatever you want to call them, who are a little bit more deeply trained and who people can go to. And I think who line managers can be encouraged to go to when they're going, I've kind of got this person in my team and I don't know whether she may or may not be menopausal, or I feel like I need to have this conversation, or she has actually come to me and said, you know, there's an issue, you know, help me to sort of deal with it. And then it becomes much more immediate and personalized, I think. So that's, you know, one of my favorites. And then I know of organizations, in fact, my sister works in one, which is, she said, is amazing, that they have every month, they do have like a menopause forum, like a midlife forum. They have a lot of women in the particular place that she works across the company. And they actually, as part of their well-being agenda, specifically put time aside so that women can get together and share their experiences and sort of give each other support. And they might have guest speakers or, you know, other mechanisms of support or advice, but actually providing a forum where people can actually start coming out in a safe place, in a safe space, and actually talk about their issues. And then sometimes some of those issues might translate to, actually, could we raise this at a company level that says, you know, I don't know, like a lot of places, for example, have started to look at things like uniforms and actually the material that uniforms are made out of, because there's lots of man-made fibers in a lot of workplace uniforms. And actually for a menopausal woman, that's a total nightmare, right, in terms of hot flushes and things like that. So there's lots of stuff companies can do, but sometimes, you know, it is about listening in the first place, like so many like people issues, like you said, you know, we're just not very good at people stuff anyway. And I can say that with hand on heart, having 25 years of trying to deal with the people issues that line managers just can't deal with. But yeah, I think doing a couple of those kind of things. So just start listening in the first instance. Training is really important, I think, comes later, but start by setting up forums where people can just actually start to speak up.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. And I think, you know, that whole thing around normalizing conversations, that we talk about this stuff, it's like anything, isn't it? If it's just not something we talk about around here. Whereas if we legitimize it, we say it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to put your hand up if you're struggling with something, and it's okay to, you know, it, obviously you don't need to do that publicly, but you can, it can be privately as well.
Yeah, and I think that language stuff is really important, because unfortunately, or you know, just it's the way it is with menopause, that some of the things that happen, a lot of the things that happen to women during menopause, are the kind of things that we struggle to talk about. And obviously it does involve body parts that, again, traditionally we're not very good at talking about. And I said to somebody only the other day, you know, if I had a pound for every time I said the word vagina now in my work, I could probably retire. But you know, it's the fact that we need to get used to using this kind of terminology, because at the end of the day, it's just part of our bodies. You know, 51% of the population are female, you know, they all have a vagina. So like, you know, let's actually get comfortable with saying the word vagina. I'm going to say it again, just one more for good measure.
Dave.
How do you come back from that?
No, Dave, so sorry, so same question, not about vagina, but you can talk about that, but no, it's more around just opening up the conversation to like thinking now about the same question about midlife, because again it's how do we, and I know Carolyn mentioned there, for you know, mental health first aiders, and I know that's an area you're really passionate about. It's kind of creating that infrastructure, not only the infrastructure but also the culture where we talk about stuff. And from, you know, from, I know you've done loads of work on this mental health and but you know, that kind of whole midlife sort of the issues that midlife generates, be it menopause or, you know, aging parents, and you know, all of the financial issues, all those sorts of things. What from your perspective can organizations do?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things. And I think before I sort of talk about this, the second one that addresses that question directly, just picking up from Caroline's comments about the, you know, set the culture and let's make it okay, have the conversations and training can come later. And I think that that's really true because you've got to have the training sort of in the fertile ground, if you like, of that and what have you. But one of the things that I've found, a particular client that I work with, has really spent a lot of time focusing on is the idea of how do we equip our managers to feel more confident in having a conversation around their well-being. And that well-being is a broader embracing topic. So yes, it's been born out of a lot of the challenges over the last 2 years with COVID and, you know, the isolation, the uncertainty, the way we did working hybridly, all of those things. It's had an impact not just on the physical side, but on the psychological side. But within that, we need to recognize that well-being, it's often not just one thing. And this is where there are opportunities when you have a conversation with somebody to be open to having a conversation that may move into topics like menopause, for example, or, you know, anxiety or you know, just I don't know, even gaining weight because of lockdown. You know, there's lots of different dimensions to it. But one of the things is that managers, there's a lot expected of managers anyway, you know, in terms of doing the job, leading the team, and actually having a well-being conversation for some, not all, can feel really uncomfortable. And yeah, uncomfortable for a number of reasons. One, because I don't know where to start to ask the question, or, you know, am I getting too personal asking this? Where's the lines and the boundaries? And I think one of the things, if you can spend some time with the managers in that area, to realize that you can raise your confidence level, and there are ways to ask supportively that, you know, they may just press into that personal area, but in a sensitive, supportive way. You can do that in that caring, supportive way without, you know, without A, being insensitive, or B, being appearing to be dismissive, because the temptation is that you avoid or you don't pick up on the signals or, you know, that kind of thing. So I think it's important to spend time there. And that's when something like the menopause can be a topic that even as a manager, you may have no experience of, whether because of age, gender, whatever. If you've got no experience of, you can still be aware that that might come up. And actually, part of it is to realize it's not your job to fix that or to fix it. Anything or become the office psychologist or anything.
Yeah.
So it's actually, how do we build that confidence in, have the conversation, see what comes out, and then give them the tools or the signposting and the information to then know, right, okay, well, actually there's some information here. There's something on our intranet here. Have you thought about speaking to your GP? You know, that kind of thing. Those are things that they can suggest without feeling like it's on them to fix. And it's really important. And I think a lot of managers, having worked with lots now over the years, is that they can feel really, really under pressure to feel like they need to take the problems off their staff. So I think that's one thing. And that's a really powerful way to do that, is because obviously they're the linchpin, aren't they, between the organization and the day-to-day operations and the people who are doing the customer service or whatever it is. So I think that's one of them. The other thing is another client of mine, national client, because of that aging workforce, they are recognizing that, you know, they have to start to prepare the impact for the impact on the work of staff who have sort of developed perhaps medical issues, you know, other kinds of issues, maybe looking to reduce hours and sort of exit out of the role, that they need to think about how do we support that and acknowledge that midlife isn't something we can just ignore or just treat as just, it's just natural aging, you know? Mm. And one of the things that this organization in particular has developed is something called the midlife MOT. And I guess the label or the title is less important than that. The idea of it is just to acknowledge, look, this is a phase of life. You know, why not check in? You know, it's okay to, let's have a look at things, as you mentioned there, Craig, about financial. How are you thinking far enough ahead? How prepared are you for your financial impact, retirement? What if you were to take early retirement? Or as Carolyn said, when you know, if you do are looking to leave because of medical issues or menopause, have you considered the impact? You know, so that they're supported around making the decision that's best for them, but an informed decision. And I think that's a really powerful way, because there are lots of dimensions, as you said, financial, emotional, psychological, family, professional, pride, you know, psychological, well-being, the structure and routine, the identity that I have wrapped up in my role, and what's that like if I'm going to start to think about leaving it. You know, all of those things are wrapped up in it. So I think those are really powerful approaches to sort of combine with that culture setting and making it more okay to communicate.
Mm.
I absolutely, like, 100% agree. I think Dave's spot on, because again, in, you know, as I alluded to in my experience, line managers just struggle to deal with people stuff, any kind of people stuff at all. You know, we seem to sort of have this block. And again, you know, it's also about how we raise our leaders, you know, and train our leaders throughout the organization and in life in general, is that, you know, they get all the training that they need, or most of the training they need, to technically do their jobs. But actually what we don't understand is that when you start leading people, actually technically most of your job, 80% of your job, is probably about leading the people, and only 20% is about technically doing the role. So I do think we get it the wrong way around. And I love the idea, like Dave said, of actually training managers and leaders in general about having good quality conversations. And I refer to them in mine as like key conversations. You know, you can train them specifically in that. And like you say, you don't need to make them an expert in the menopause or, you know, anything else for that matter, but actually knowing how to sensitively have a conversation, knowing how to have really good listening skills, knowing when it's important to signpost. Because again, you know, back to your point in terms of, you know, they don't need to be psychologists. They don't need to take this on. They don't need to become an expert unless they have a particular interest in a particular area. And actually, you know, again, one of my other statistics I'm going to drop in, but actually doctors, and dare I say it, gynecologists, only 7% state in a survey that they feel that they've been adequately trained about the menopause. So that's the medical profession. Only 7% think they've been adequately trained in the menopause. So we can't expect, you know, our line managers and employees to take this on. Same with mental health issues. You know, they worry that they're going to do more harm than good if they're talking to somebody with a mental health issue. But it is just about saying, how do I have a good quality conversation where I'm, sympathetic, empathetic, I listen really well, I ask good questions, and then I understand the right moment at which to sort of signpost somebody. Those skills will go across any. Now, that makes for good meetings. It makes for good performance management. You know, I love the idea of the MOT and the check-in. And again, you know, if you've got a standardized performance management process, you know, for those that are in that right age bracket, there could actually be a bit of that MOT built into some of that, and saying, actually, let's talk about the future. And it then becomes legitimate and not a risk of saying something discriminatory. You know, you don't want to fall foul of age discrimination legislation. If you're, you know, if you're then sort of saying, well, I think you might be coming up to retirement. Well, you know, that's not the right thing to say. So, you know, making that legitimate and part of a process that already exists will then help you to avoid any sort of legal stumbles.
Definitely. No, it's interesting, isn't it? It often comes back to that whole, you know, the whole thing that it's such a transferable skill, and yet organizations tend to ignore it as a, you know, that ability to have a meaningful conversation. And it's just, you know, if you ask people intuitively, that's what good managers do, but we don't promote it, or, you know, we're generalizing massively, because
but it's very true. And I think that's where training should be focused sooner rather than later, like you say, because it will stand them in good stead, you know, whatever the issue is that they're dealing with. Because, you know, apart from a very small number, every workplace issue has a person involved in it somewhere.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, we've talked about some specific, you know, but very practical things to do. And again, well, we may have covered these already, but any other thoughts around, particularly about, let's focus mainly on menopause, and then maybe extend it into some of the more midlife issues. What else can we do to create that awareness and empathy? I mean, I'm a bloke, I'm midlife, you know. I mean, what is the experience of going through menopause that we need, you know, we're not just blokes, but everybody, you know, pre-menopausal women need to understand as well. You know, what are some of the things that we need to be thinking about there, Carolyn?
I think, again, you know, going back to sort of, you know, data and information, but just to try and put the menopause in context. Like I said, 51% of the world's population are female. Almost 100% of those females will experience the menopause in some way. So we need to start from the premise of it's going to happen to every female. So, you know, for me, I'm an advocate as we actually should be talking about the menopause as part of the normal life cycle, you know, when we're educating in schools. But when we go into the workplace, we also have to understand that there are actually currently, and this number is gradually going up, but there are currently over 60 different symptoms of the menopause, the possible symptoms. So for me, that's like a really good place to start in sort of going, actually you're not expected to know all of them, but actually understanding that it's a very complex thing, because what happens to one woman, another woman will never experience. And of those, you know, 60 plus symptoms, you know, the menopause can last for up to 12 years. Okay, so let's put again that in context. Puberty lasts on average about 2 years. Menopause can last up to 10. So it can be six times longer than that couple of years process that, you know, we all remember, you know, sometimes with a bit of a wry smile, but that process where, you know, we're slamming doors, our hormones are all over the place, you know, the Kevin and Perry, you know, sort of stroppy teenager, you know, whether we remember that ourselves or, you know, our own children have gone through it, we've witnessed it. But the menopause is the reverse of that process, and it lasts potentially six times as long. So we need to start sort of understanding some of these facts. And the fact that of all of those symptoms, 60 plus symptoms, you can have some of them, you can have all of them, you can have none of them, you can have them to varying degrees of severity. They can come and go over those, that 12 years. You know, for example, one of the classic ones that people, you know, associate with menopause is hot flushes. But 25% of women don't have them. So that isn't, you know, the only thing. So I think it's about, there is an education piece for me, that we need to sort of understand it and understand who it impacts. But I think in organizations, first and foremost, it's about standing back and going, like, if you employ women, like, at all, you need to be prepared the fact that this is going to happen. And actually, if you can start that conversation sooner rather than later, you know, and again, you looking at the data in terms of, you know, the average age is 51, but one in 100 women go through it before the age of 40 or start their menopause before the age of 40. You know, 1 in 1,000 women start it before the age of 30. So we do need to understand that it can happen kind of at any point. For me, you know, I've got a very particular story. You know, 1 in 10,000 women, their menopause starts below the age of 20. And I was one of those. I was 19 when mine started. So we do need to understand that this isn't just a thing about women at the tail end of their employment, because it really isn't. So I think it's about being brave enough, actually, as an organization, seeing that it matters, and then starting that conversation, you know, in any small way at all that you can. And actually, what I'd really love to see is, like, guys starting that conversation, you know, not always just, you know, often, not always, but often the HR person is a woman, you know, and but it would be nice to see it coming from, you know, other places within the organization. Would be great, you know, it'd be great to get more male allies like you guys who are willing to talk about it. But I think it's, you know, we just have to put it on the map. It, you know, it's very much like the trajectory that we've gone through with the mental health stuff, you know, and Dave talks so, you know, so eloquently about that. And it's the same thing. You know, we need to sort of treat it in the same way and see it as important and see it as impacting people. Because again, you know, for menopausal women, there's a huge mental health impact for them, huge. And so kind of start there, really. Sort of see it in that same group.
Thank you, Karen. Dave, anything to add to that?
The one of the questions I often ask when I work with managers is how comfortable do you feel if this topic came up? And obviously that varies, because it varies on gender, but also age, you know, if you've had some experience. And I think that's where we can start that conversation, because I think you're right. I think you said it earlier, Craig, that you know, or men are, they're hungry to learn this now. You know, we do want to know this, because we see it happening, if nothing in a relative, you know, in a loved one. You know, we see this happening. And in the past, and I remember way back, you know, people would make, it would be a humor, it would be a joke, you know, there'd be comments, and it'd be brushed off. And, you know, no sense of the impact that person was having or the experience they were having. It was kind of felt as if it was minimized, and that was the way it was, whereas it's clearly not the case. So how do we share that? You know, how do we share in that, so that we can appreciate, you know, I'm talking as a bloke here, appreciate that it has a significant impact, and a significant impact in so many ways. And that's something that, yeah, you know, I'm sort of bought into this well-being process, but I think a lot of blokes are, we care, you know, we care, we've got people we care about, whether we're in a team, we're running a team, we've got relatives, friends, family, that, you know, I think we do care, and we want to know more, you know. And just partly is to get over that feeling of it's okay to to be part of this, or to have a conversation, or to ask as well. That's something that perhaps is a little bit scary at first. If it hadn't been talked about, or it was made of as a, you know, dismissed and minimized in the past, if we can do what we're doing now, which seems to be happening more and more in the workplace, where it's open, it's aware, it's a thing, then it's okay for me to say, what does it mean? And tell me a bit more. I don't really get it. You know, it's okay to say that, or to acknowledge that, you know?
I think thanks, Dave. I think Ethan put something up on the screen a few minutes ago to ask any questions or comments. I think we've got a few coming in. Ethan, did you say you got something you want to pop on the screen? So here we go. Let's have a look. So this is from Sarah. I'll let you read that. Yeah, I think emotional intelligence is the thing that was going through my head in terms of this. Any responses to that? We can't read the full thing there, but
I'll pick up on it if you don't mind. Rolling. I think in answer to this, the question is: is it difficult for people to learn these skills? I think yes and no. I think it's, you know, what intention or what place are you coming to it from? I think some people do have natural, just like in anything, some people are more naturally high in EI, emotional intelligence and different skills. I think that's a given, but it's very learnable. And I think this is the thing that I've learned over the years, you know, with thousands, I guess now of managers, is that most, and I think pretty much universally, most of them, they're there to do a good job. They're busy and under pressure, and what they're really after is understanding the importance of why this is, you know, understanding that importance. Why do I have these conversations? And I think they're already bought into that, most of them. But then how is the key thing? And there are tools, there are approaches, and it sounds very clinical to say, oh, there's a tool to this, that, and approach. But I think when you're a busy manager, in defense of managers, you know, when you're a busy manager and you're juggling a lot, having an approach, having something to go to think, right, this is how I can have that conversation, and this is the things to not do and to do, can be a really good way to sort of frame what is already there, my good intention, the fact that I care and I do want the most out of you and my team. To frame that in a tool that's more effective to work. So I think the answer is yes, you can learn these skills. It's firstly recognizing it takes a bit of practice, understanding why it's important and the do's and not to do's in that. Yeah, so definitely it's my
I agree. I think it's like any, it is a skill. It is, you know, some people, yeah, there'll be a kind of normal distribution of people who are find it really, really hard because it's just not the way they're wired, but most people are in that middle and can learn. There's people who are naturally good at it. I think there are people who can, you know, majority of people can learn, as you say, with some simple techniques. Carolyn, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah.
I'll come back to you, Dave, in a minute. Sorry, Carolyn.
I completely agree with Dave. The other thing I would say is that putting it really down to its most simple form, you know, do I think people can learn those skills and build them? Absolutely, I do. Will it come more naturally to some than others? Definitely see that too. But actually, you know, some of the best that I've seen is when you actually just come at it from the point of view of trying to create a safe space. Because normally when somebody, you know, gets agitated or angry or, you know, visibly uncomfortable or might lash out a bit or leave the room or refuse to speak about it at all, that's actually because they feel unsafe. And so they're in a place of fear, and it's about trying to spot the signs. So actually one of the things you can train managers on, you know, yes, it's about questions and tools, but actually in its really raw state, it's about understanding basically what's known as silence or violence. You know, what are the silence, you know, people do when they're confronted with something where they're afraid or, you know, not feeling safe. And actually, how do you spot those signs? What are the cues and signs? You know, because that's body language stuff as well as, you know, actual verbal language. And what happens when somebody goes towards violence, you know, and how do you spot that? And then the tools of actually bringing them back to something safer. And again, if you learn those skills, that goes across whether it's a meeting, a one-to-one, you know, any people interaction at home, you know, with your kids, you know. And again, that's sometimes a good place to come at it. You know, I've done it with managers before where actually I've brought it to a much more personal context. And again, for me, when you talk about menopause, it's that, you know, for every woman that's going through it is a guy, whether it's a husband, a brother, a friend, a son, you know, a line manager, whatever it is, there's some guy somewhere for that woman who's going, what the hell is going on? So, you know, it's coming back and trying to personalize it and actually almost take it away from it being a workplace thing and actually go, you know, do you have a woman in your life that you care about? You know, then actually let's help with these skills. But I think actually just in the first instance, training people about what to spot when, you know, when somebody feels unsafe in interaction. And that's really quite easy to train and for people to get used to spotting that. And then you can build from there in terms of, okay, so what do you do and where do you go next?
Just a question for me, and I know the answer is going to be hugely important, but the importance of the language that we use, and it kind of links to Sarah's question as well to a certain extent, I'm kind of relieved that you, both of you, have used the term, and I've kind of avoided it because I'm really conscious of just talking about the menopause, because it's almost like, you know, it's, I don't know why, it's just that sort of, oh, you know, she's going through the menopause. It's like it's this sort of generic, it's kind of links to what you were saying earlier, Carolyn, which is like it's this generic thing that's got this sort of like set number of things that will happen to you and it's always the same. And I know it's only like kind of, for me, language is really important, the language that we use around that. And I'm not just I'm just choosing that as an example. How much of that is a barrier in that people just don't have the vocabulary to be able to articulate some of these things, whether it's the menopause or whether it's, I can see you're upset and you know, I want to help, you know, what how does that play into this, do you think?
For me, you know, it does, because inevitably, you know, it is, you know, language evokes emotion, and then that's the emotion that then, you know, provokes a response in some way. And again, it comes back to that adage, isn't it? You know, that somebody will always forget sort of, you know, what you did and what you said, but they'll never forget the way you made them feel. So we do have to be, you know, conscious of that. You know, for me, in fact, it was really interesting. You pick up on that, Craig, because I was talking to somebody the other day on something else I was doing, and somebody from overseas, and they said, oh, they just say menopause, not the menopause. And it's really interesting, isn't it? Cultural difference. It happens to be the way that I term it. You know, and some people might just say menopause or the menopause. You know, it used to be the change. And actually, there's a body of women. Actually, Davina McCall is at the front of this, that actually is trying to go back to using the terminology the change, because actually, let's get away from the sort of past connotations of that, but actually, it's a huge change. Yeah. And actually, what the change does as terminology goes, it is a huge transition. There is a massive change going on. We are all conditioned to fear change in whatever, you know, so actually it's helping us to understand that this is something that is, you know, can be really quite difficult, because we all, you know, when we go, you know, we're going to go through a change program at work, we'll go, oh my God, we're going to be terrible, I'm going to lose our jobs. So, you know, but actually they're trying to sort of get across the idea of, you know, it is something quite significant. So I do think the terminology, you know, matters, but ultimately I always used to say to line managers, look, I can train you till I'm blue in the face, but actually my best piece of advice is just talk to this person how you would want to be spoken to.
Yeah.
What would you want somebody to say to you, or somebody that you loved? You know, how would you want it to say? Just bring the human back in as opposed to the line manager. Yeah. And actually, you know, if somebody had something difficult to broach with you, what words?
How would you want to approach?
Yeah.
Dave, thank you, Carolyn. Dave, any thoughts on that yourself?
Not really. To be honest, I hadn't really thought about the phrase. I guess, you know, how I would encourage somebody to approach a conversation is make it safe and just encourage conversation and then bring it up in however they describe it as, you know, if it's going to come up at all. Never really thought about that. So I don't particularly.
No, it's fine. I don't want to put you on the spot.
No, it's fine.
I mean, it goes back to what you're saying, Carolyn, as well, is that, you know, the word menopause just seems really, I know, you know, it's a medical definition, but I think it's almost like we did some work with, he's a good friend of mine. He's a consultant who there's a point we're gonna put another question on the screen. It was he works on health and safety issues, and he's very keen on language. And he got one of his clients, and he does this with all of his clients, to move away from the term lost time injury as a way of, you know, of defining an injury where someone has lost time at work, to a life changing injury. So it completely changes the frame of reference from it just being, you know, this kind of thing that you can compartmentalize and sort of almost take all the emotion out of, into something that actually has a huge emotional impact on someone, and that we need to, that's why we need to eliminate it. Not because we're trying to just, like, you know, we don't want to have to pay any overtime for people to come in and cover for this person. It's actually because we've spoilt their life, and we've made them, you know, lost quality of life incident. That's what they referred to as, which I think is really important. So,
and I think that for me reflects the idea of actually talking about midlife.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think that's, you know, when you say that term, I think most people sort of kind of understand roughly where people sit. You know, from an age point of view, but you know, I think Dave's point from earlier is, you know, it's absolutely spot on. And I talk about this again when I talk about the menopause, is that, you know, there's a lot of other stuff. You know, you said that beginning, there's lots of other stuff going on at this time, you know, that I think, as you said, you know, they're looking after elder relatives, but actually there's quite a lot of those that are dealing with empty nests.
Yeah.
So children leaving home, going to university. So there's a lot of emotion.
Oh yeah.
Going on. Even if you take the menopause out, you know, so for guys as well as for women, you know, there's a lot going on at that point in time. You know, you're thinking about the future, probably having a bit of that, like, is this it moment? You know, there's a lot going on sort of, even if you put the menopause stuff aside. So I think midlife is like quite a good term, because people sort of get that and sort of understand it's a little bit of a, is a bit of a milestone, isn't it?
Transition point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know we've got some more comments, and I don't want to, I want to make sure we get through all of those. Ethan, have we got another, I think you haven't said we have another comment to pop on. Yeah. Okay. That's, do you want to respond to that, Carolyn?
Yeah, absolutely. And I thank you for that, Lucy, because I think you're absolutely spot on with that comment. You know, a lot of women don't know it's happening. I think, you know, I said at the start, you know, when it happens to women and they do realise it's happening, you know, 66% of them don't know, you know, the anything about it, or very little at all. So, yeah, a lot of women don't realise it's happening because we don't talk about it enough, because we don't educate. There is lots more information getting out there now. And I've got, if anybody would want it, I've got a giveaway sheet, if anybody would want one, that's actually lists out the current sort of list of symptoms and also the severity with which they're being experienced. So, you know, yes, there has to be maybe a little bit of acknowledgement from a woman that it might be happening to her, but actually you could also send that sheet out maybe to every employee, males and females, and go, actually, these are signs and things that you might want to look out for. Because, you know, like I said, with over 60 different potential symptoms, you know, it might be difficult to spot, and some of those symptoms very may well be indicative of something else. I think in response to Lucy's point about, you know, people that are in denial or, you know, don't want to discuss it, I think it goes, you know, very much back to Dave's point about, as a line manager or a colleague or whatever, you know, you're not there to sort of fix people's personal issues or whatever. If it's having a direct impact on their work, then you kind of need to then keep it as a performance conversation. If they don't want to acknowledge there's something going on, you might want to say to them, look, I think that there's something else going on here. You might not feel comfortable talking to me. Is there somebody that we could identify within the organization that you might feel comfortable speaking to? It may well be that it's like, actually, do you think maybe you need to speak to your GP, and would you authorize us to get a report back from them? My issue with that is that, sorry, that's my door alarm. The issue with that is that you then end up with this thing where GPs aren't well enough educated. So a lot of women go to their GP and don't get help. But if somebody just doesn't want to discuss it, you can't force them. Mm. And if you can go away from that conversation with the knowledge that you've done as much as you could, and you've documented that, and you can say, look, I tried on this date at this time to have this conversation and they weren't prepared to talk about it, and I've offered them other avenues that I've signposted them to. If you've got mental health first aiders, you know, maybe menopause advocates, if you have them, you know, those kind of people within the organization, and then potentially options outside. There is seriously just nothing more that you can do until that person is prepared to come and have a conversation with you. And that, as a line manager, is as much as you can do.
Dave, thank you, Carolyn. Dave, I know the question specifically from Lucy is geared towards menopause, and I don't want to kind of devalue that. But is there a parallel with just general midlife issues? You know, that or mental health, and I'm struggling with this, but I don't accept it, or I don't want to discuss it. I know we've worked together a lot before, and you have a kind of a way of just trying to open up a situation. Or open up a conversation that, you know, not forcing someone to have a conversation they don't want to have, but just genuinely showing your concern and actually being supportive.
I think in terms of other parallels, in terms of other challenges and issues and not recognized, and I think the answer is yes, because you know you can sort of be feeling like you're doing well, your life's rolling on as it does, but then suddenly start to feel differently and perhaps just put that down to something else. You know, I'm not having a great day, it's tough at work, this, that, and the other. And what sometimes is useful to recognize is that there may be a little bit more to it, and that little bit more to it may be that realization. And this is what, you know, the term midlife crisis is a phrase that I don't like, but it has been coined around this idea that we get to a point, or we can get a point in life where we start to see the years that have passed and see that they outnumber the years that potentially are in the future. And that is actually can have a striking impact on our sense of emotional and psychological well-being, coupled with, you know, general factors around aging and health and what have you. But that can have a real impact. And it can be easy to not register that or to appreciate what it is. And I prefer to step away from the idea of it being a crisis, because, you know, often, you know, on rare occasion, it might be a crisis, a genuine crisis, but often it is that just that unsettling feeling and that change and just not being able to put your finger on it, just and it can build, you know, and that sense of gradually feeling lost or trapped in certain aspects of life can be really disorientating. So yes, it can creep up on us almost, and it can happen in different ways. And I think in answer to the question about how do we potentially just nudge a conversation, you know, so that somebody can at least start to acknowledge that what I like to do with managers is get them to think about, right, you're not here to diagnose, to identify, or to sort of say that's what the problem is. What you're here to do is just at least give a safe space, as Carolyn was saying, to encourage them just to open up, because they may not have an idea. It may just be the first time they've started to talk about this feeling. So what I often talk about in my approach is ask, tell, which is kind of just start. Why? Don't go straight in with the concern, you know, that I'm really worried about blah, blah, blah. Because initially, inevitably, you will get a barrier coming up because they're not prepared for it. They're not already talking. And they're not perhaps ready or even articulated or organized their thinking around it for themselves, you know. I know that it took me years to realize what's going on here. And I think the ask, ask, tell is to just start wide, you know, start very general. How's things? And, you know, how's things going? How are you? How are you doing? And it sounds very obvious, but those kind of questions genuinely asked, not in passing where you're, you know, how's things and you're off. Genuine question can at least help somebody just start very generally. And you may, out of that conversation, get that response of, you know, yeah, I'm okay, I think, but, you know, and then you get something, you say, okay, so do you want to talk about it? We'll grab a cuppa and we'll have a talk. You know, you start to then allow them just to air it. So the ask, ask, tell for me is to start wide. And if you still feel like you haven't given that proper opportunity to open up, then narrow in a little bit more, but don't go straight into the concern. Just narrow in and sort of ask, you know, so how are things going at home? You know, how are things with workload? You know, a bit more specific, but still quite wide. And then if you're not sure and you still have a concern, just say, you know, you seem a bit, you know, go in and tell them your concern. You know, you seem a bit distant lately and I just want to talk about it. You know, chance to just, you know, share your thoughts. Is there anything I can help you with? Do you want to talk about it? So go into the tell bit at the end, so you're kind of couching it in that funnel approach. And the last tell ties into Carolyn, your view of, you know, it might not be me that you want to speak to, but please do know that there's people here, you know, there are other people, don't go it alone. Here's who you could speak to. Perhaps you've got a colleague or friend, why don't you speak to such and such? So those kinds of approaches help support that safe conversation around that.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, I really agree with that. And I think it plays back into Lucy's point exactly. And a lot of women won't realize it's happening to them. You know, it's bizarre actually now, you know, the number of conversations I have with women, and I sort of say, oh, you know, I do stuff around menopause and then we sort of get into a, you know, just a casual conversation. And I start mentioning some of the, you know, the signs and symptoms and things that, you know, happen. And I've genuinely, you know, talked to a lot of women who then, like, the penny starts to drop. They're like, I suffer from that. Oh my God. Like, and then you talk a little bit more and they're like, oh, you know, so it is that, it's just that really, because we're uneducated about it or something off over here that actually, you know, a lot of women don't realize that that's what it is. But again, you know, as a, as a line manager, you know, again, it's that listening, it's taking a genuine interest, and it's even just listening around the office, even, you know, might not be in a one-to-one, but, you know, one of the classic things for women is brain fog, memory issues, which, you know, causes a dip in confidence or a dip in performance, because, you know, they can forget words in the middle of a sentence, they can forget what it was that they were saying halfway through the sentence. They might not be realizing that that's menopause stuff, but if you notice that in somebody and that's different to how that person normally is, or you start to notice it over a period of time, or other colleagues maybe comment on it, you know, it's actually, if you do know some of those signs and symptoms, and I think Ethan's put the link to signs and symptoms sheet up, so, which is great. But actually, you know, you can actually, you know, have a bit of underlying awareness of these things, because actually a huge proportion of women present themselves to their GP thinking that they've got dementia when in fact it's the menopause. So, you know, that is kind of one of the classic signs and one of the earlier signs. So again, you know, just a little bit of awareness from a line manager's point of view means that you can start to sort of go, you know, and again, you're not trying to diagnose them, you're not a doctor, but actually a little bit of awareness that you can maybe help piece together and think, actually, maybe I need to have a conversation because something's a bit different here about this person.
Yeah. And as Caroline said, we've put the link to the signs and symptoms sheet, which I think, you know, is great. I think men and women should get that downloaded and you know, have that available. I think it's a really, really good resource. So thanks for sharing.
Can I just jump in there? An observation then to move back to Caroline on this one. And that I think that thing about the, you know, forgetfulness and cloudiness, that's an example where humor can often be used to cover over, oh, I'm just getting old and that kind of thing. And it's an example, isn't it, that using humor in that way can actually be a sign that you might want a conversation as a manager. Would you agree? What's your experience on that?
No, I absolutely agree. I mean, because one of the things I say, you know, I spent nearly 25 years in HR in some of the world's largest employers, most recognizable brands. So I have met and dealt with thousands and thousands of people one way or another. And in all of that time, never did a woman come to me and say, I think I'm going through the menopause or I'm struggling with this. And never did a line manager come to me and say that either about somebody that they were managing. So I think for me, that absolutely demonstrates, you know, the fact that we don't have this conversation. But you're right. The only things I can pinpoint were a couple of occasions where there's a bit of that, oof, you know, is it me or is it hot in here? You know, oof, whatever. And then it just gets laughed about uncomfortably normally and then brushed over. But, you know, you're right. Actually looking out for where somebody is using humor to deflect something, or usually, a sense of embarrassment. Again, just make a mental note of it. And then the next time you get the opportunity with that person, I think, you know, Lucy made another great point on here saying that actually sometimes getting out of the office environment and going somewhere a bit more neutral helps people to feel a bit more, you know, listened to and a bit more comfortable. But actually, you know, you're spot on, Dave. You know, look for where that humor is used to deflect something. And that is quite often is an indicator of something that somebody's feeling a bit uncomfortable about.
Yeah, just on a quick, sorry to interrupt, Craig, quick on that. I think that is used in other lots of different ways, isn't it? And I think what we're not saying as a, if you're a manager, is that you pounce on that. Because obviously that could, it can make the situation a little bit more magnified or even set up the resistance, but it is about just noting. And it could be a mental health issue. You know, from experience, I know, and particularly coming from a policing background and what have you, the culture around that, humor was a very, very popular way of masking a lot of that, and particularly from a macho culture, it was very useful. And I'm using air quotes here, so I'm not saying it was a genuine useful. It masked a lot, so I think it's important to recognise that can be a real telltale sign, can't it? And it may signify anything really. So it's just to register that, to then have a supportive conversation at the right time.
Yeah. And I guess it's a double-edged sword as well, because it can be used as a way in, but it can also be used as a way of trivializing something and kind of just brushing it under the carpet. So it needs to be used with skill by someone who's. Okay, I'm conscious of time, and we are kind of, you know, literally in the last couple of minutes. So we've had some other comments, and I think broadly we've responded to most of them. And thank you for everyone who's kind of taken part and added some value to the conversation. Just I wanted the last thing to be said by you and Dave and Caroline. So let's start with you, Dave. Anything just final thoughts, questions, thoughts and comments about the whole thing we've been talking about and what organizations can do, just kind of wrapping things up, I guess.
Yeah, I think there are so many things, and I think it goes back to where do you start and where are you at in the journey. And if the starting point is to even just create the climate where this is okay, I think that's the starting point, isn't it? And culture and the okayness to have the conversations is the best starting point. And then let's look at how we equip the people who are likely to be, you know, in the front line, if you like, of spotting and supporting the, you know, individuals and themselves, you know, right, to have these conversations. And then signpost away to the right support. I think that's my key thought.
Thank you, Dave. And final word with you, Carolyn.
Yeah, I agree with Dave as well. You know, for me, it's highlighting that sort of the invisibility of it. You know, it's actually just trying to be on alert, start and spot it. Hence, you know, my symptoms checklist, because I think it's about just starting to improve that awareness and then just having it on your radar and watching out for it. You know, again, I've got to finish with some stats. You know, 62% of women said that the menopause made them, that process made them feel invisible. So, you know, you need to bear that in mind, and particularly in organizations around when that comes to development, you know, promotion. Again, there's, you know, numbers around the number of women that haven't gone for a promotion because they were concerned about the impacts of the symptoms of the menopause on their work performance. And also of 59% of women that took time off as a direct result of their menopausal symptoms, only 5% of those women had the menopause listed on their sick note as the reason they were absent. So we're doing a lot of hiding as women behind other things. So some, you know, we do need to raise that awareness of what the signs and symptoms are so that we do just start to dig a little bit, you know, behind some of that, because again, there is just an awful lot of embarrassment and hiding still going on that we should be aware of.
Okay, thank you. Well, we've had some of the comments, and one has just come in from Kirsty. Was about, I won't put it on the screen, but it's, we have a menopause community on Yammer, which I guess is in her organization. Yeah. A great way for people to share experiences and offer support. So I think, again, I think technology does offer ways to build communities around this, which I think is fantastic.
Isabel said earlier, so thank you for that, Isabel, that we're you know, they're looking at setting up lean-in circles for women. Again, fabulous ways of people just getting together and creating a safe space. That's amazing to hear that that stuff's going on.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, look, I'm going to wrap things up because we've run slightly over. Thank you so much, Dave. Thank you so much, Carolyn. I've really found that an enlightening conversation. Really, I've learned a lot, and I hope our audience has as well. If anyone wants to connect with you, obviously, if you're watching this on LinkedIn, you can connect directly with Dave and Carolyn and find out more about what they can do. And also, if you want to connect with me and we're not already connected, then I'd love to make contact with you. So, thank you very much, Dave. Thank you very much, Carolyn. Really appreciate your time. Stay safe, stay well, and thank you very much.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. If you've got any ideas for episodes you'd like us to cover in future, you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can use the feedback form at engagingic.com. If you're not already subscribed to the show via your podcast platform, please do so. And if you could leave a review for us, that would be absolutely fantastic. We have links to other episodes at engagingic.com. All of our previous episodes are available there. And if you're interested in our visual communication services, our big pictures, our learning maps, our explainer videos, and also our live graphic recording, please get in touch with us again at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Thank you.